There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
With Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk.
Welcome to episode 32 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. I, Cam Lewis, am again hosting, and again I have the lovely and excellent Brendan Kuhn here with me because Tyler Yaremchuk, he's still out in the woods. He's still wandering around. We haven't heard from him in days. We have no idea what's happening to him, but we are here to recap a extremely frustrating weekend the Blue Jays just had against the New York Mets.
Too many of those. Yeah, too many frustrating weekends, frustrating series. Going into the series, you figured you were set up to hopefully win two of three. Pitching matchups looked mostly in your favor outside of Taiwan Walker yesterday, which ended up being the game they scored all the runs in. But another frustrating series.
So what we've had recently is the Jays just lost two of two to the Red Sox as one of those games was rained out, and the Blue Jays then lost two of three. Like you said, it was a series that it really did seem like they could do some damage and compensate for the unfortunate series against Boston. The Blue Jays were in a fortunate spot missing Jacob DeGrom and Marcus Stroman. It was kind of funny that the one game they teed off on, so they lost the first game 3-0, and then the next game they teed off on Taiwan Walker, who was probably the best starter they faced all weekend. Yep. And then the third game on Sunday, that 5-4 loss, just another downer. Hey,
yeah. And it wasn't like they weren't making solid contact or, you know, doing anything, nothing against Rich Hill. You know, they're getting hits. They got some walks. They were getting runners on, often leadoff runners, I think four of the first five innings there. Just failure to capitalize and a game we've seen play out comparably in the past. The bullpen, we haven't had as many crushing bullpen games, it has felt like, in a while, like this Sunday game was. But a tough series. You wanted to, you know, ride a little bit more momentum going into this big Boston series before the return home. And eventually this team needs to turn it on. I think you and I both believe they're better than the record indicates, but at the same time, you need to start winning some of these games and putting together a better record. They just need to start doing it. It's been frustrating.
Both of us, I think, are hoping, since we're going to be there on Friday, both of us are going to be there, we're both hoping that that's the beginning of them going on a nuclear hot streak, because that is exactly what they need. But before we talk about, you know, Toronto's return and all this trade deadline stuff we're going to talk about in a bit, we're going to do three up, three down, as always, brought to you by Twig and Berries. Head over to the Twig and Berries website and buy yourself some nice clothes, some sweaters, some underwear, some socks, different things like that. And use the Nation15 promo code to get yourself 15% off your order. Support an Edmonton business. Well, a St. Albert business technically, but if you're not from Edmonton, it doesn't really matter. It's all kind of the same thing if you're from, you know, BC or Toronto or wherever you're from. So the first up that I have here is, we're just kind of going to gloss over the first game that happened on Friday. It was very boring. The Jays bats got shut down. But things got really exciting in the second game. The Jays teed off on the Mets for 10 runs after they made a very interesting lineup change. They put George Springer, for the first time since, I think, before he went on the injured list for the second time, back to the number one spot in the order, put Vladdy second, and just totally rejigged the lineup. And then they teed off for 10 runs.
Yeah, I think it was a move that was a long time coming. I don't necessarily hate, or, you know, I don't feel like I can get too strongly on Charlie for not doing it earlier. I think it was one of those things where the organization wanted to do it, and they just wanted to feel They wanted to wait until there was a moment where it felt like it was a good time to do it, where you could point to like, there's, you know, something a little off right now. Let's just mix it up for the purpose of doing that, opposed to, you know, having Semien, you know, have a great streak of a week of games and then all of a sudden just demote him. So ultimately the lineup shuffle moved him down to three. So that's one of those things too, that doesn't feel like too much of a demotion. No. So I'm a big fan of the decision there. I've been calling for it for a while, hoping for it for a while. And as unconventional as Bo Bichette as a four hole hitter feels, he's actually kind of perfect for this lineup. For the same reason I've always wanted Vladdy in front of Bo. And we saw some people mention it on Twitter today, but you want people who get on base in front of Bo Bichette because Bo Bichette is a contact hitter. He's not going to be the high on base guy. So putting him in front of Vlad isn't the best lineup construction. So dropping him down and having three guys who are productive and get on base in front of him means Bo Bichette will now have more base runners on for him to do his contact thing, put balls in play, and drive in some runs. So it's a really good fit for him, as much as it may not seem like it to a traditional lineup constructionist.
Yeah, it was a hell of a game offensively, because you put Springer in the one spot and he went 2 for 6. You Vladdy in the two spot, he goes 2 for 5. Semien moved down to number three, more of an RBI spot, 2 for 5, drives in 3 runs. And then, like you said, Bo in the RBI spot as well, 3 for 4, one of his best games of the year, drives in a couple of runs. Then Teoscar also had a huge game, 2 for 4 with 4 RBIs. And then even at number six, it was Lourdes Gurriel going 2 for 5. It was like, this was the first time all year we've seen the Blue Jays rock and roll with their optimal lineup, and they really came through and it was sweet. And then also one thing we need to mention is that insane catch that Springer made in center field. That was one of the catches of the season so far, I think.
And he came down hard and yes. He bounced up and felt good and showed no sign of wear from that back in the lineup again today. So as exciting as the catch was, it's just nice to see Springer doing very athletic things and not being all that terrified. Why? I don't think I'm there yet. I'm not there yet, but it seems like Springer's not there anymore where he's worried about aggravating his prior injury or hurting something else. He looks full go. He's been playing really consistently lately. He hasn't been getting days off. Absence of the ability to be a DH this weekend, being in an NL ballpark, and he's playing every game. So, yeah, I think we're kind of over that hill of babying Springer. You can always have a re-aggravation or end up getting hurt, but I think we're past the point of his build-up process, him being comfortable playing every day, him feeling well enough to play every day. We're there. And, you know, as much as in the past, off days have been a topic of conversation for Vladdy and stuff like that, these guys are playing every day. Like, Bo and Vladdy have not missed a game this year. I don't think Semien has either. I think he maybe got a day off where he ended up getting back into the game, but like, these guys are playing every single day this year, and you know, obviously taking advantage of the DH spots and giving them half days here and there, but they're playing every day. Springer's now healthy. We're about to enter a long run of games, and we'll see how that shakes out. But yeah, I mean, we're seeing the top five guys you want to see every single day, and yeah, I mean, it felt great yesterday.
So now we're going to stick with the second game. And what I've got here for our first down is Hyunjin Ryu had a pretty mediocre start. I wouldn't say that he got knocked around. I wouldn't say he got drilled, but he only went 4 1/3 and the Mets hit him 10 times. He only had 4 strikeouts, 3 earned runs. What did you see from Hyunjin Ryu on Saturday?
Yeah, as much as it feels weird to see like a guy not get out of the fifth and give up 10 hits, it did not feel that bad. And that's mostly, it's just a lot of singles, right? So he was getting dinked and dunked in just one of those BABIP fueled games where the other team is getting more hits than probability would probably have you expecting. And those games happen. I mean, Ryu isn't a big strikeout guy. And I think that was the big thing yesterday. It wasn't a ton, especially after the first couple innings. It wasn't a lot of swing and miss. Which obviously is a beneficial thing, but you know, he only had 1 walk. You know, the 4 strikeouts where when you're giving up that many hits, the 4 strikeouts and 4 1/3 aren't that great. So I think again, that's the biggest thing is just, is he getting swing and misses? Is he really keeping guys off balance? But at the end of the day, he was just giving up singles. And not an exciting start. I don't think it's a worrying start. I am kind of waiting for that vintage feeling Ryu start, which this certainly obviously wasn't. But yeah, I don't put too much stock in this being a problem. As much as prior Ryu starts where his velocity is way down and he's walking guys and he's giving up hard, deep, you know, extra base hit contact.
So sticking with pitchers, we're going to flip now to Sunday for our second plus, which is Ross Stripling. Stripling has been kind of a roller coaster ride this year because right off the hop, he was bad. And then he fixed his windup. He started bringing his glove in closer so he wasn't tipping pitches, and he was very good. Like, not just effective number five pitcher, but like number three pitcher. He looked fantastic. And then in his most recent two starts before Sunday, he got kind of smacked around a bit by the Rays, and then he got drilled by Boston in that one start. He only got one out, allowed six runs. His ERA ballooned all the way back up to 5.04. But on Sunday against the Mets, Stripling was good again. He went five innings, allowed five hits, one earned runs, not a single walk, six strikeouts. So you think that good Stripling's back, we don't have to worry about, you know, him regressing into being early season Stripling again?
I think at this point, I just view him as a number five starter, which means that you're happy with the good starts and you hope they stick around. You're not, I'm less confident in them or projecting them out. But at the same time, I mean, you know, we view everything very narrowly through the lens of the Toronto Blue Jays. This is pretty consistent with most teams, right? I mean, 4 and 5 starters are going to have up and down games. And yeah, I mean, there's two super rough starts in a row for Stripling there. Can't deny that. And they were a problem, obviously. If your 5 starter is having games like that frequently, then they're not good enough to be a 5 starter. Stripling had a long enough run there where he was good to earn some grace of having 2 awful starts and to get another start, much like he got on Sunday here. And he performed. He delivered. He was strong. You know, he maybe even gets a 6th inning if his batting spot in the lineup wasn't in play for the 6th inning. So, you know, going 5 innings, no walks, 6 strikeouts, that's a pretty good day from your 5 starter. And obviously this is an up, obviously a reason, not a reason the Jays lost today. So, yeah, good to see. And it looks like Stripling's getting the home opener against the Royals. So you'd like to see a good start there to start that big critical homestand.
Yeah, let's hope so, seriously. And then flipping to the down from Sunday's game as well was kind of the bullpen, but specifically Ryan Barucki, who came in the 6th inning right after the Jays had grabbed the lead. Barucki just recently came off the injured list, and there was talk before the game, oh yeah, he's, you know, going to be in high leverage spots. This is a huge ad for the team. Getting Barucki back is fantastic. And then he comes in right after the Jays had grabbed the lead. They had a nice big 3-run rally in the top of the 6th. Barucki comes in, allows 1 hit, a walk, 2 earned runs. Jacob Barnes came in after that. Meltdown was just terrible. So what did you see from Ryan Barucki? Is this a cause for concern? I noticed his velocity was not where it was earlier on in the season when he was excellent.
The best of Barucki is 97 with a wipeout slider, and he's able to put it where he wants it. We've seen kind of that like mini Andrew Miller in the past from Barucki. We've seen glimpses of it and something you can dream on, but then he either gets injured or regresses and has this fluctuation in velocity. And today Barucki was 94 to 95 and he had no idea where the ball was going. So, you know, when you're throwing a flat 94 and you can't place it, when you can't bury your slider in on a right-handed hitter, you know, that's where you get somebody like Pete Alonso who's going to do damage to you. So, yeah, Brucky's still really, he's a guy they're going to go to because he's one of the pen arms. But yeah, I think he's lower on the list now, than he's been in the past. I would slot him below Meza as far as lefty priority, certainly. And you just hope that eventually he can work through this and find that premium stuff again. But, as I said, more importantly, he needs to have an idea of where the ball's going. And he can't just be dropping cookies or walking guys and walking Michael Conforto, a fantastic left-on-left matchup for him, to then go into Pete Alonso the next at bat, that's a problem. And maybe, you know, if that Alonso home run can be a solo home run instead of a 2-run shot, because you're not having an uncompetitive matchup with Conforto before that, that's what you need. So if you're a lefty guy who excels against lefties, can't avoid the walks there, that's a problem, and that's what we saw today.
And then sticking kind of with this too, why was Jacob Barnes the guy that Charlie Montoyo went to kind of mop up this mess? I think it kind of, that left a sour taste in people's mouths because it didn't really seem necessary to use Adam Simber in the Saturday game, given the team was pretty far ahead. And then you wind up in a situation like this, Simber's probably not available on Sunday, and they're tossing out Jacob Barnes there, who's bad. And he looked terrible in that outing, like DFA candidate bad.
Yeah, that's a good point. Really, a lot of this was driven off of what happened in the Saturday game, right? So Ryu can't get out of the fifth inning. And it's totally fair to argue or you know, point at what decisions Charlie made there. But the Jays did score three runs in the ninth, right, against the other day, so Saturday. So they were up 7-3, I believe, when Simbrick came in. So that's still close-ish. That's still the type of game where I think
They could have blown that. Like,
yeah, they could.
It wasn't a runaway.
Oh, we have seen that.
We've seen
that. You know what? I actually don't have a problem with what Charlie did yesterday. And the biggest issue was going back to the Ryu start. Concern from his performance? No. But the fact is, him not getting out of the fifth then meant you're using a lineup of important bullpen guys. And that impacted the decisions that were made in the Sunday game. So, yeah, just one of those things that goes to show, even if Ryu had escaped yesterday, not giving up any runs, depth is important from a starter, or at least, you know, having the stuff that can get you into the sixth, seventh inning, because then you're not lining up a parade of bullpen people or bullpen arms who are important and then spoiling them for the next day. So, yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem with what Charlie did there. It just didn't work. I Barnes is a lower rung guy in this pen, and he might not be here a week from now. But yeah, the pen was tired and had been used heavily, and they're in a run here of a lot of games in a row. So it's just something you have to be mindful of, trying to get guys rest day. Thomas Hatch is starting on Monday against the Red Sox, which potentially is another short start. So all these things go into a manager decision. I saw some people bothered by it. Yeah, it didn't feel great seeing Jacob Barnes there, but it didn't necessarily feel like a problem when full context is evaluated.
That's very reasonable. So we'll jump now to our third up, which is the return of Alejandro Kirk. I think he had a pretty strong weekend. We talked about this in the last podcast. The Blue Jays' question about the catching situation got answered for them when Danny Jansen hurt himself in the Red Sox series. Kirk was hitting well in AAA, so he came up. Easy decision to be made there. Made life a lot easier for everybody. Kirk, in his first game back, went 1-for-3. He was one of the three guys to pick up a hit that game. And then in the Sunday game, he went 2-for-4. He obviously didn't come up big in that situation with the bases loaded later in the game, which was unfortunate. But he also tossed a couple of guys out on the base paths as well. I thought, all in all, it was quite a good weekend for Kirk, who I'd imagine we'd all like to see playing most of the games behind the plate for the foreseeable future. Even when Jansen's healthy, I think we'd like to see that.
Yeah, that eighth inning opportunity he had there with the bases loaded, too bad to see him not deliver in that moment, because he was having a pretty great game, right? He was having an impact on both sides of the ball. There wasn't an error there, a ball that got by him as well that wasn't great. But as a whole, Kirk looked good. And I think you and I agree that, you know, this is now, as long as he's healthy, a team he belongs on and will remain on for the remainder of the season. And we'll see. Danny Jansen sounds like he's out a while, so I'm not sure it matters all that much. But if and when he came back, I think that's when the decision between, you know, Reese and cutting Reese or just sending Danny down needs to be made, because Kirk can have an impact that those guys probably aren't capable of having, and he deserves to be on this team. So yeah, it was great to see him throw out two guys, right? Like what a confidence builder for him. Two different bases too. Throws out a guy at third, throws out a guy at second. Very accurate throws both times. And yeah, I mean, the guy just hits lasers, right? He's a line drive hitter. He's got incredible bat to ball skills. And I hope to see him more than Reese McGuire moving forward. I think he's good enough to get those reps. And he's probably good enough to see some DH time too. If there's starts where you want to get Reese in there, that's fine. But let's take a look at Alejandro Kirk in the DH spot instead of running Randall Grichuk when he's ice cold out there, right? Grichuk, despite his contract, eventually, and his season as a whole has been fine. Like, he has not been a problem.
Big picture is fine.
We know the lows with Randall Grichuk are not great, and he looks terrible when he's in one of those slumps. And it's been a while now, and the team needs to win games, and his contract status shouldn't matter. If Springer's good enough to play center field, there should be games where Grichuk just doesn't get to play because Kirk is the DH. And I think there's a pathway for Kirk to see, 60% of the games behind the plate moving forward and additional at-bats beyond that.
That's interesting you bring up Grichuk, because my final note here, my final down was going to be the fact the team went 3-for-19 with runners in scoring position. They only put up 4 runs on Sunday, but they had 9 hits and 4 walks. A bunch of those hits were for extra bases. They, stranded, like I said, a whole ton of runners. Like, Springer, Vlad, Semien, Bo, Hernandez, they were all on base, the top five. And then Grichuk, our Grichuk puts up an 0 for 4 spot there, the number six spot. It's like he was a massive rally killer in Sunday.
Yeah, they in those first five innings on the Sunday game, the Blue Jays scored zero runs. In those innings, they had three leadoff doubles and one leadoff walk. So the first runner was on four of five times, and three of those times they were on second base and they didn't cash in. And George Springer made a really poor decision trying to steal third. And you know, you can't always blame runners in scoring positions. Sometimes just random, right? Like a lot of the time, you know what? You just don't get that timely hit. Hitters can't force a hit. If they could, they would do it a lot more often, right? So sometimes it's just unfortunate luck, that type of thing. But you want to see the ability to cash guys in. And they had a lot of opportunities to score more than four runs that they did today. And they came up short. And, you know, losing by one, it's easy to look back at those first five innings and see what a lost opportunity there was there. And, yeah, I mean, you've got this great top five you feel great about. And then immediately, you know, roll that into Grichuk. At the very least, he should probably be lower in the order. Going back to Alejandro Kirk, Kirk is probably deserving of being the sixth hitter in this lineup when he's starting. So yeah, I mean, Grichuk in the AL where you have a DH, he should probably be hitting eighth or ninth. We're probably at that point. And yeah, I mean, it needs to be at a point. We're far enough in the season now where lineup decisions need to be made based on best ability to win now, and not necessarily trying to get guys going and stuff like that. So yeah, Alejandro Kirk, six hole hitter. I'd love to see that happen.
That's what we all like to see, I think. Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, that's 3 Up, 3 Down brought to you by Twig and Berries. Remember the promo code NATION15. We are now going to jump to the topic labeled Other Stuff. And this move specifically is going to devastate you because I know you're a huge fan of him. You're probably going to wear his jersey on Friday to the game. But TJ Zoik is now gone. They designated TJ Zoik for assignment after we talked about him on the last podcast for 30 minutes. Zoik was designated for assignment, and the Blue Jays worked out a deal with the St. Louis Cardinals in which he's been traded for cash considerations. Are you worried that this is going to become Chris Carpenter 2.0?
I am not. And now that you mentioned the TJ Zoik jersey thing, I actually wonder how many of those exist, like have been purchased, right? Like he's got family members who I'm sure wear the jersey. If he was my family member, I would wear the jersey. But beyond that, has a TJ Zoik Blue Jays jersey ever been purchased by a human being? The answer is probably no. So yeah, no lost money there. But yeah, look, hopefully as with anybody, hopefully they work out, right? If he goes to St. Louis and can perform, he's in the National League, a little easier division. He can have that occasional start where he gets a bunch of ground balls and stuff like that, but he's a not good pitcher. That's the reason the Jays were comfortable moving on from him. And there occasionally have been guys DFA'd where we scratched our heads, and this was not one of them.
No, absolutely not. I think we all knew that Zoik's time on the roster was limited. He got a bit of a chance this year to be a starter early on. He wasn't very good. He was walking more guys than he struck out. There was just no way this guy could be effective as a reliever either because he never misses any bats. But like you said, once a Blue Jay, he's a Blue Jay, so we'll root for him. Also, speaking of that, that reminds me of one other random thing I noticed during this game. I swear that Jonathan Villar had more hits in Sunday's game than he did as a Blue Jay during his entire tenure last year. Like, I don't remember that guy ever being on base. Ever.
When you said once a Blue Jay, always a Blue Jay, we'll root for him. The first name that popped into my head was Jonathan Villar.
There he is. Blue Jays legend.
No, I'm comfortable not rooting for that guy. Yeah, like he had a rough stretch as a Blue Jay.
Terrible.
And, you know, to be fair, I mean, those things happen, right? It's not like the guy had any decreased motivation to be good last year. He's a free agent. At the end of the year. He wanted to perform. He was not good. It was also reasonable to expect that he would be better moving forward. He obviously really impacted his earnings going into this year. I think he signed for like $3 million or $2.5 million, something like that. And his deal the year before was like $8 million, I think. So, yeah, I mean, he's obviously a capable player. We've seen what he can do well in the past, and the worst stretch of his career happened to take place when he was a Toronto Blue Jay. And one of the kids that the Jays have drafted in the past, sons of big leaguers, Griffin Conine, son of Jeff Conine, was the return for the Marlins. He's actually having, not that we need to talk too much about Griffin Conine, but he's having an interesting year. He's an A-ball. I still don't think he's much of a prospect.
He's 24 in A-ball.
Yeah. He leads all the minor leagues in home runs. Guy is a dinger machine. He also strikes out a lot. He's like Joey Gallo kind of as the prospect, but worse. Like it's not necessarily somebody I'm worried about.
Don't like that. Don't like to hear that.
Yeah, no, he's like, if you took what was bad about Joey Gallo as the prospect, that's what Griffin Conine is. And hopefully, we'll see. Hopefully that one doesn't come back to bite the Blue Jays. I guess it has a chance, but yeah, he's still got enough holes and issues in his profile that I'm not too worried. But not a good tenure as a Blue Jay, Jonathan Villar.
Okay. I'm looking at Villar's stats now, and apparently he put up a 188 batting average and a 481 OPS for the Jays over 22 games. And apparently he had 13 hits. I don't remember a single one of them. I don't remember any of them happening. Like in my mind,
probably more errors than hits though. Right. Or at least more, if you combine like base running mistakes and errors, yes.
I remember the base running mistake. Yeah, I do remember that one. That was one of those things that like really stuck out during their like ugly stretch last year when we thought they were going to blow their playoffs.
It was just dumb baseball, right? Like a brainless, thoughtless baseball. You saw quite a bit from him. So yeah, that signing didn't hurt in the offseason. Hope he's doing well. But yeah, we can move on.
Yes, we've already exhausted way too much energy speaking about Blue Jays legend Jonathan Villar. We'll pretend that never happened. Who cares? But that's a perfect segue to our another key topic here. So the Blue Jays were buyers at last year's trade deadline. They added Taijuan Walker, Jonathan Villar, Stripling, Robbie Ray. They had a pretty big go. And then, you know, that took them into the playoffs where, you know, nothing happened, obviously. But they had to get in. They had to reward the group for the nice season they had. And now this year, they're in kind of a weird situation. I mean, the team is, what are they, like 4.5 back of the wild card now. They're pretty far back of the Red Sox for the division, I think. That seems fairly insurmountable, but making the playoffs is still possible. Like we've all talked about the run differential a million times. They're pretty good, but you're seeing a lot of people out there right now who are saying, look, this season's cursed. The team ain't that good. The relievers are bad. Starters are mediocre. You've only got like 5 good hitters. The bottom of the lineup's a black hole. Should the team maybe just go ahead and sell high on your Robbie Ray or your Marcus Semien and recoup some assets? Is that something they should look into, or how do we feel about that?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think the organization would view it through that lens. I think the return to Canada is a pretty important factor here. I don't think they want to immediately return home and be a non-competitive team, or at least intentionally be, right? So we've watched this team all year. We know they play competitive baseball at the very least, even in the lowest of lows during the season. This team plays competitive games.
Don't get blown out very often.
No, not at all. Like, and when they've had those really rough stretches, that's what's made it even more painful, right? You're like burning through all your bullpen guys and still losing the game by one run and or two runs or blowing it late. Like those. The team is competitive. They always have been. The Red Sox blowout from last week was kind of an anomaly. That was super rare for a game to play out like that. As we speak right now, the Oakland A's are losing to the Mariners by a run. If they lose today, the Jays are right back to still being 4 back of the second wild card. So yeah, I mean the division. You know, unless you win 8 in a row against the Red Sox or something like that, the division's kind of out of play here. But that's fine. I mean, the wild card 2 spot still exists. It's there for the taking. The teams in front of you are the Yankees, who are like half game in front, something like that. They've got their issues. We know that. The Seattle Mariners are
bad,
playing way above their head, and it drives me nuts. I'm on the West Coast, so I've kind of got this like feel for the Seattle market. And I've got friends who are, Mariners fans, and it drives me nuts because like they're not trying to win. Their team shouldn't be winning. They put less effort into building a bullpen than the Blue Jays did in the offseason. All of a sudden they've got a top 5 pen in baseball. Like just the randomness of a bullpen, right? Yeah. Like all of a sudden this string of random guys are performing great. If you're 4 back of the Oakland A's and the only teams between you and them are the Yankees and Mariners, like the playoffs are still in play. The wild card is still in play. And at worst, I could see this team just not doing much approaching the deadline. Mm-hmm. And probably the games against the Red Sox will have an impact on what they decide to do. But Mark Shapiro's aware of the narrative. He probably does not seem like somebody who's targeting a step back, and he knows how big a deal it is to be returning home. So worst case scenario is the team just kind of does nothing. And to be fair, the team hasn't given them a reason to be super aggressive. At the same point, or on the same hand, there's also moves that can be made for the future, right? So if you go add a starter who's under contract next year or beyond, or a position player, left-handed bat, who's under contract next year, you know, and beyond, obviously those things will fit a team, because regardless of what happens this year, this team will make a push to be a playoff team next year. So yeah, they're going to be busy working the phones, whether it's small upgrades, long-term upgrades, bigger moves. I think the only thing we can rule out is big time rentals, yeah. Right? They're far enough back now where they're not going to be chasing a Max Scherzer, which is a move I actually think they would have made if they were like right there with Oakland, or, you know, holding a wild card spot right now. Beyond that, they are going to be busy, and I still expect to see some moves, and selling, I don't think, is an option. As interesting as it would be to see what Semien and Ray could fetch on the market.
Yeah, I'm not too thrilled about the idea of selling either, for the same reason as you. Like, let's be real here. Like, It would be such a bad message to send to the players. Like, you've had a really, really rough couple of years here. You've played in Dunedin, you played in Buffalo, you played home games in other teams' stadiums. You're finally coming back to Canada, and the fans are going to go absolutely nuts. It's going to be unbelievable. It's going to be a great time for these guys, young guys, and, you know, guys who have never played for the Blue Jays in Toronto. Hyunjin Ryu, it's like halfway through his contract now, and he's never pitched at Rogers Centre for the Jays. Like, it would just be... it would just be unfortunate. Like, imagine Vlad having the off season that he did, doing all the work that he did, you know, the fitness, getting in shape, this and that. And now he's putting up his MVP season, and you go to him and you're like, hey, Vlad, like, we're going to give up in late July because you guys are four games out of the fucking wild card. Like, is that how you get this guy excited about signing a 10-year extension this winter? No. Like, and also, let's be real here. Like, are you really that excited about the prospect of trading Robbie Ray to get Anthony Kay and Semien Woods-Richardson? Like, is it that exciting? Is it that much better than just qualifying both of them and they both walk and you get two draft picks?
Like, yeah, and I mean, we've seen it in the past and how people like to paint this front office in a certain light, and like, they're so excitable about the idea of adding more young players, and that's all they care about. They've spoken at length about the competitive cycle and where they're at, and they're now in that make the playoffs last year. They're now in that progression towards being competitive year in and year out. And they care about the market. They know about the Toronto baseball market. They know what this return means. They know what they could get for some of these guys. But this, all the context around it supersedes that. And I would be stunned if they went and made a trade unless there was just something super obvious out there. But also, we've seen rentals just don't get those like overwhelming, shocking returns anymore. No. So if that's not there, there's really no reason to entertain it. If they were five games back where they were now, that would mean the return to Canada would have fans in a little bit more realistic place of what the team's odds are. But as it stands, the team probably sits at like a 30% chance of making the playoffs. That's enough to keep your good free agents and see what you can do over 2 months of baseball here. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a couple of flawed teams in front of you. And you get hot, you go on a run, you beat up teams like Kansas City. Minnesota is selling. You've still got seven games against them, and they're going to be worse when you play them than they have been so far. There's an opportunity to win a lot of games in these last 2 months of the season, and they know that. And so it'll be a fascinating week. It also matters what the competition does too, right? Like, I think Tampa is going to continue being aggressive, and beyond Nelson Cruz, they will continue making moves. The Yankees, I think, are probably in a similar mindset as the Jays. The Mariners would probably be silly to make any type of move unless it was a long-term move, because again, they're playing above their heads. And even if they were to ride this out and win a wild card spot, actually projecting that out or planning for that or acting like that is a likely possibility, would be a stretch. And that's a team that's done one of those quote unquote rebuilds the right way. They haven't made these, you know, dumb moves here. So yeah, I mean, you've got teams that are in similar places to you, some in worse position than you. So I'm not sure any of these teams in front of you are going to get significantly better. So just win more games than you have now, make up four on the A's, and you got a real chance to still get after that wild card two spot.
Exactly. Don't be cowards. Don't give up. You want to, you know, the Jays want to sell tickets when the team's back in Toronto. They're going to sell out those first couple of weeks because of the novelty, and then the team needs to be sort of competitive so they can sell out late August and the entirety of September. Shapiro knows that. I think we're both in agreement here. We're not going to see a fire sale. That'd be weird. Anyways, so kind of the next up thing is this four against the Red Sox is kind of season defining. And up next is brought to you by our other sponsor, DoorDash, in which you can use promo code BJNPODDD. If you're a first time user of the app, you get 25% off and no delivery fees. So if you want to go ahead and order yourself some food and, you know, do all that, then use the promo. That's great. So yeah, next up, season defining stretch here. If the Jays go ahead and sweep Boston, these four games, they're probably buying at the deadline. If they get swept, probably not buying at the deadline. Yep. So what are our expectations for this series here? Four in Fenway. And the Red Sox are rolling. They just, actually, I specifically had this pointed out. They had a hilarious win against the Yankees today. And like, I think at this point, if the Red Sox are playing the Yankees, it's in our interest to cheer for the Red Sox. I'd rather Boston just run away with the division. And
yeah, I'm kind of there.
Yeah, that's where we're at. And so with the Yankees situation is Domingo Germán had a no-hitter through, I think, what, like seven innings? And then he allowed a double, lost the no-hitter, came out of the game, and then their bullpen just imploded. And the Yankees were up 4-0. Boston puts up five in the eighth inning, and then they lose the game. So we went from the Yankees might throw a no-hitter at Fenway to the Yankees have blown a four-run lead at the end of the game at Fenway, which is fucking hilarious.
So funny. Something like that happening to the Yankees tastes delicious. It always does. When it's being done by the Red Sox, not quite as good, because another team you wish these types of things would happen against. But yeah, from a Jays perspective, it's probably at this point best to just cheer for everything with a wild card rooting interest. And we've had, we've seen the Blue Jays have some devastating, heartbreaking, oh my goodness, losses this year. The Yankees have had a lot of those too.
Oh yeah.
They have had a rough year. And Aaron Boone dealing with the New York media and how he has to, you know, describe these and come up with some new emotion every time they happen is kind of funny. But he's just like, yeah, like how many worst losses of the year can you have? And I'm thinking like, yeah, Blue Jays are right there with you. We have felt that. But yeah, it's always fun when that happens against the Yankees. The Red Sox are unfortunately good, decent. It's, you know, you're playing four games against them at their home park where they are great. And you know, last time the Jays went there, they split a series, actually outplayed the Red Sox quite a bit.
They did.
But yeah, you've got Pivetta, Richards, Tanner Houck, and
Eduardo Rodriguez is the last one. So
we hit pretty well. So, you know, it's pitchers you've seen, pitchers you know well, outside of Houck, who's a good prospect. But yeah, I mean, guys you've hit in the past and guys who have had good starts against the Jays. So they need to go have a strong series, win at least two, right?
Like, yeah, you got
to
go.
You know, 1-3, 0-4. What a drag to come home. They don't even get an off day before coming home and all the hoopla that will be. So, yeah, man, like just, you know, win two. And obviously two isn't great when it comes to the playoff race and everything you're in, but also being realistic, this is a good team in their ballpark, and two isn't a bad result in isolation. But if they can go hit the ball like they did last time they visited Fenway, they're going to win more than two games. And that's what we'd like to see, right? It's some miracle run where they go 4-0, sweep the Red Sox, come home against Kansas City, a flawed team, play Cleveland for four, a flawed team, with injuries. Like, there's a chance here to go on a run, but also we've been saying this for a while and the team just needs to do it. So, you know, win some games that are heartbreakers for the opponent. Like, let's experience some of that, right? Like, let's have a heartbreaking
loss. Let's be the bad guys. Let's fuck somebody else up.
Yeah, let's be down two in the eighth and score four and, like, take that lead and win the game. Let's experience what that's like and ride some momentum into the Rogers Center on Friday, where you and I will be.
Yes, we will. So, yeah, that's pretty much how I feel, too. 2-2 against the Red Sox, I would be perfectly fine with it. We'll be there on Friday. It'll be extremely fun. Thanks, as always, BK, for coming on and chatting Blue Jays with me. I will see you on Friday, as we've mentioned about 1,000 times now.
We are excited. As depressing as the baseball can be at times, we are going to a ball game in Canada for the first time since 2019. So, yes, regardless of all the Blue Jays status around it, what a cool experience this will be. I can imagine it being emotional for a lot of people.
Yes.
And I'm very much looking forward to it. And here's hoping this is one of those things that just is part of the turning point. We shall see.
Hopefully that's what we're all hoping for. The Blue Jays come back to Canada, go on a 32-game winning streak. It's incredible. you know, Moneyball stuff. That's what we all want to see. It'll be a blast. Thanks again for coming on. Thanks again for listening. Please give us a 5-star rating. Please share the podcast, all this and that. We will be back on Thursday night, Friday morning kind of thing, right before the Blue Jays are back in Toronto to talk about all that. We will see you then. Enjoy the week.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
With Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.